Donalana Kitchen talks about food. Donalana Kitchen talks recipes. Donalana Kitchen talks about lots of other things on community radio. Welcome to the Donalana Kitchen. It is summer. We are going to celebrate summer and celebrate good food on this show. This is the Donalana Kitchen. My name is Lana Noctigal.
I keep wanting to sing. June is busting out all over.
It is.
I'm sitting on the back porch with my coffee and the sun today going, this is the best time of year.
The mosquitoes haven't showed up
yet. No, I know. And I mean, as long as we're still climbing up to the solstice and the days are getting longer, it just feels so expansive. And then when you hit the solstice and you realize, oh, it's going to reverse now. It's like, so this is the moment.
Enjoy this fine weather, and enjoy central Iowa. We are really blessed with some good stuff right now. The rest of parts of the world may be a little iffy, a little dicey, but we do have some good weather and good
areas. We're pretty
good
lucky
areas.
Here.
Yes. And this wonderful radio program is brought to you every week. We get together here on Tuesday at noon. We do this show live, without a net, folks. Yes, we
yes,
do.
Yes, and the intro is always sung live, too.
Yeah, you never know what you're going to get. You never know. So Don and I get together here at the KHOI studio. This is community radio. We get by with a little help from our friends.
Support underwriting comes from Wheatsfield Co-op, your full-service natural foods grocery in Ames, community-owned, community-focused since 1974, open daily 7 a.m. to 9 p.m., located downtown at 413 Northwestern, just off Main Street in Ames. Everyone can shop Wheatsfield Co-op.
And we do. Often I turn to calendars and old lists of gods and goddesses.
Very seasonal here in every sense of the word.
I have a book called The Pagan Book of Days and like to check in just to see what we should be raising a glass of beer to. And this past weekend, we missed it, but we can still do this, celebrate the Mother Earth, celebrate the Earth Mother and all good working women. June 2nd is called Mother Shipton's Day. To honor the Mother Earth in her fecund aspect, so think of all the things that are blooming and growing right now, Mother Shipton, whose real name was Ursula Sontheil, was a famous seer, witch, wise woman in Cambridge, England, and she is the patron saint of women who work in laundries.
Ah, the laundress.
So we have that covered now. So raise a glass to her. She's honored on the Wednesday immediately after Whit Sunday.
Yes, and I'm sure we're all doing our own laundry in our own ways. And it's a wonderful time to be hanging them out on the line, as a matter of fact.
I love to hang out laundry.
As a matter of fact.
It's a good thing to do. And, yeah, so honor the sun. There we go. Last week, we talked about weddings here. It is June. I went to a wedding this weekend, and other people are too. Yeah. So all you June brides and grooms
Wait,
out there.
So that's the one you were calling the dance for?
Yeah.
Oh, fun.
It was fun. It was fun. Tons of people, tons of good times, and we had a good time. It was nice. We talked about weddings on this show last weekend. But today on the Donalana Kitchen, Donna is going to introduce us to the wonderful world of lard.
Lard.
So you probably haven't given much thought to lard, so it's about time you do. We'll talk about that today. Also, we're going to talk a little bit about radishes, chives, and a few books. There's some summer reading that I think should be looked into, too. But first, here is a news item from the Donalana Kitchen News Desk. Tick-a-tick-tick-a-tick-tick-a-tick-tick-a-tick. That's the Donalana Kitchen ticker tape. Here we are. Headline, Oreos go south to Mexico.
Thanks to NAFTA.
Yes, sorry about that, folks. Souring Chicago's sweet treat for generations. All of us have loved munching on chocolate Oreos dipped in a glass of milk, but things have gone a little sour. Last year, about this time, the workers at Nabisco's monumental 10-story plant in Chicago's Marquette Park neighborhood thought they were going to get some sweet news because their the CEOs told them that they were going to, that factory was going to have a $130 million modernization investment upgrade, and everybody was happy with that. But they all lined up to hear the news, and they heard that all that money was going to be picked up and moved south to a factory in Mexico. For 104 years, the Marquette Park community has been proud to smell the Oreo smell that has been wafting through their neighborhood. But it seems that Nabisco decided to take advantage of this NAFTA sort of thing and move things from Chicago to Mexico, where the minimum wage is a bit more than $4, not per hour, but per day. So this is all part of that globalization and corporate globalization in action. The Kraft Foods and the other folks, Kraft Foods bought a bunch of stuff, and including Triscuits, Planters Nuts, Ritz Crackers, Chips Ahoy, and Oreos, and they can, I guess, do with it what they will. So think of that, folks, when you're eating your Oreos. I like a good Oreo every now and then.
I guess that makes Oreos no longer American.
Not really. No, well, it's on the continent, but it's not American as in the United States anymore. There's a rather nice editorial cartoon here. There is the CEO is pictured twisting apart an Oreo, and it says, "Twist, eat the cream, and throw away the rest." So shame on Nabisco. Shame on the Oreo.
Well, everybody better be thinking about this when we're ready to sign these new big global trade pacts like the TPP and the Trans-Pacific Partnership and the one for Europe. And it's more of the same, and it's not going to be good for some people.
So
it's only good for the rich people, I'm afraid.
So our hearts go out to Oreo bakers.
What are they going to do with that? I bet that's a big, old, interesting building, for goodness sake.
Oh, yeah.
What do you suppose they'll do with it?
Condos. What do you think?
Either that or they'll tear it down, you know.
Parking garage.
Yeah, who knows?
You never know.
Oh, dear. Oh, dear.
Right. But on to some good things. Oreos, I don't think, have any cream. They call it the cream in the middle, but it's not. I think it's made out of something else. Anyway, we're going to be talking about...
It's not made out of lard.
No. So, Donna, tell us about lard.
Well, lard is one of my favorite fats, and it's, we are in pig country here, so the lard should be ubiquitous. Of course, it's not. You can actually buy lard at the grocery store, but that's not really what I recommend eating because that's been sanitized, bleached, preservatives added.
Bleach? Why would you bleach it?
Well, because you want it to look like Crisco.
Oh, dear.
I know. This is a long and sordid history of how we got from lard to something made from cottonseed, which was called cottolene or something like that, and then to the soybean version, and then was called Crisco. I mean, when I was growing up, Crisco wasn't even, it was a brand, but it was used as just the word for shortening, basically, I probably ate a lot of chicken fried in Crisco, and my mother was a big pie maker with Crisco. And, of course, it worked. It worked beautifully.
It was handy. Well, lard, it's that wonderful stuff. It's from the fat. It's what we crave. It's the stuff that holds our cookies and cakes together.
I've made two cakes in the last couple of weeks with lard because I just wanted to see what it would do. And it's wonderful. I think I may not go back to butter cakes again because. But the thing is, here in Ames, we're in a very envious position because we do have a lot of sort of smaller farmers producing, pastured pork, and you can buy the fat and make your own lard. It's quite simple. Or you can buy lard. I'm sure Wheatsfield has it. But but freshly rendered and then refrigerated lard with no additives. Probably Story City Locker has it. I think you can get it at Farm to Folk. So we actually have a really readily available supply in town of very, very good lard.
Good. Can you talk a little bit about, they talk about rendering lard.
Rendering lard. Okay.
So how one does
well,
one do
that? Well, there's two types of fat on the pig. First of all, I want to say that before the invention of, before we got into our oil-producing age and lubricants came out of petroleum products, lard and pig fat was widely, widely used for greasing all kinds of things, and as was beef tallow, candle, soap. You know, people did not throw the fat away. It was called the fat of the land. That meant the good parts. Or in English, like in Shakespeare, to lard the earth meant to make it rich, and lard was actually a verb for enriching. Fats are precious. They're very important in the human diet. Our brains are made out of fats, for goodness sake. So in a culture, especially, where we were burning a lot of calories and busy being peasants and working hard, fats were very, very important and scarce. So it was not wasted. And farmers, before the turn of the 1900s, actually made more money off the fat on the pig than they did off of the meat.
Oh, my.
Because there was, such a demand. We didn't have petroleum jelly. We didn't have, motor oil. We didn't have motors either. But, we had to grease a lot of things.
Well, the Industrial Revolution started there in the mid-1900s, and there were all kinds of things being invented.
Oh,
that needed,
yeah, and lots of machines that needed those fats. So lard was a very, very important part of that. Then somewhere in the 1890s or so, they decided, there was a lot of cotton going on, and the cotton seeds were a waste product. So they learned how to press the cotton seeds, and then they created a market for that oil.
Ah.
And then they created a mixture of beef tallow and cotton seed that they was sold as, what was the name of it? Cotolene, C-O-T-T-O-L-E-N-E. And they promoted it.
Was that to eat or to?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. Cotolene combines the science and skill of 19th centuries and for health. Cotolene, the healthful shortening. Fairbanks, who was the big promoter of this and kind of cornered the market, his favorite saying was, "Cotolene shortens your food and lengthens your life."
Oh, well then.
So there was a point. Actually, when my son was at ISU, he wrote a paper called Move Over Lardass, and he interviewed my mother about, when she switched because she was that generation. So she was born in 1911, and she grew up on a farm in southeast Missouri. And, of course, the only fats they had were what they made on the farm. So they rendered their – I can even remember going to butcherings when my uncle still had the farm, and they say, oh, you use everything but the squeal. So to render lard, there's the leaf lard, which is, I believe, around the kidneys, which is a more delicate fat and is supposed to be the supreme fat for pie making. So that can be separated out. But mostly all the pig fat can be, I've made it by cutting it into chunks, not too small, and putting it in a pan in the oven. And you just kind of, on a lowish sort of heat, 300, 275, and you let the fat melt. And you just keep pouring it off and straining it, and it goes down to smaller and smaller pieces. And what's left, people also eat as they're kind of like cracklings. You can, it's the crispy bits so that you don't have to waste any of it. But that's how you render lard. It's a very easy process.
Ideally, you melt it. It turns clear. in the heat, you strain out the icky bits, and then when it solidifies up again, it gets that and milky white.
Yeah, and it stores really well in the fridge. So what my mom was telling my son was when she moved from the farm to Cape Girardeau, which was a town of about 30,000, she switched to Crisco because at the time, and this is still true, this is why I wouldn't just buy the normal packaged lard at the supermarket. She said you didn't want to buy lard from someone that you didn't know because, you know, it might not have been refrigerated properly. It does go rancid eventually. So people of her generation were concerned when moving off the farm and not being able to make their own. They bought what was considered cleaner, purer, more modern. And then she moved during the war, World War II, to Chicago. And so that was very, very urban. And, of course, my mother was not the only person. Large amounts of people left rural America and moved into cities during those periods. And shortening was touted as sophisticated, cleaner, more modern. Pigs were, like, for poor people to eat, you know, and there was the whole...
That's ironic. Chicago, the...
Yeah, the meatpacking center of the universe, right.
Lots of pigs there,
I know. Well, lard has become almost a waste product.
Oh, okay.
You know, the meat processors kind of sell it to, you know, even the organic lard, like Organic Valley, just has to sell their excess pig fat off onto the market where it's, you know, processed into either lubricants or there's still a lot of Mexican restaurants do still cook with lard. So you might be finding it there. But I highly recommend just getting, because we have such a good local supply. We're really, really lucky. And, of course, everybody still knows that lard makes the best pies.
Yes, it does. It really does. I've dipped into Crisco, the Crisco jar, in the past. But when you
not me.
See, you've been a chef a lot longer than I've kind of gone through I try new things all the time, and so
There was a period where there was some kind of organically derived shortening type of product, and now there are some other products that are marketed as vegetable shortenings that are non-hydrogenated. Here is the crux of the story, and this is the really, you know, those of us with a historical memory must keep this sort of story in mind. Okay, so pig fat was denigrated. It was considered indigestible, unhealthy. The marketers and the health people went crazy at the turn of the century, you know, saying, oh, no, don't eat that stuff. It's not good for you. Da-da-da-da-da. Eat this new product. Da-da-da-da-da. And it got more processed fats, more, you know. Then, of course, we find out in fairly recent history, no big surprise, that both margarine and Crisco, which were invented to replace butter and lard, are actually very unhealthy. They're made from, what's that called? Hydrogenated oils, which it turns out are highly, makes the highly artery clogging. Yeah. And very unhealthful. So do not eat any sort of – in fact, I think in New York and some other places, they're outlawing the use of those hydrogenated fats because they are so, so unhealthy. So here we had a whole century where the processors of industrial food sold us a product replacing, you know, the things that humans have eaten for thousands of years, lard and butter and yum, yum, yum. With the newfangled modern equivalent, which turns out to be radically dangerous for your health.
And it does seem that we buy it. We've listened to advertising, and we just plain follow.
Not all of us are going to do this deep biochemical research. It's just, you know, and the research, frankly, had not been done. It's not like they knew it was bad and they were trying to pull the wool over our eyes. It's just that everybody thought, oh, isn't this cool? Look at this white, fluffy oily stuff that comes in a can and doesn't need refrigeration and is so clean and so pure and so cool and
like Jell-O.
And so bad for you.
Yeah, it's true.
Yeah.
It's well, we were
lesson learned.
We were convinced by
ourselves, basically.
Actually, there were supposed doctors on radio telling us that not only LARP, but cigarettes at a time were considered.
Yeah.
So you never know.
I come back to this thing all the time where I have to say, you know, we can send a man to the moon, but we still don't have really thorough science on what's going on inside our microbiome, how our food is digested, how nutrition really works. There's a lot we don't know.
Ha! Huh. I have a question. What is this term shortening? Reading in recipes, they say shortening. Now, that refers to lard, butter, Crisco.
And the fats that are hardened at like refrigerator temperatures and still are fairly solid at room temperatures. I mean, you know, soft butter, soft lard at room temperature is soft, but it's still, it's not olive oil. It's not liquid. It doesn't puddle up.
So why didn't they call it hard or soft? Why short?
I just saw this in the paper that I was reading. What did I say?
It's one of those things you just, all right, you just go ahead and do the recipe and you think, well, somebody called it shortening as opposed to tallening or
I lost this place in my, it comes from the fact that that kind of fat with that structure does something to the gluten and it's called shorting it. That makes it flakier.
Short strands of gluten.
There you go. So that's where the shortening word comes from.
Ah, there you go.
Because it's very good to bake with.
Yes, it does. Making things fluffy. Important to make things fluffy.
Fluffy cakes, fluffy pie crusts.
Good.
Yum.
Sheep, can you make, do sheep have fat that we eat or do you use sheep fat for other stuff?
Gee, I don't know. It's probably a rare commodity.
Right.
They're not particularly fat. It's like sheep's milk cheeses, which are wonderful. Huh? You know, there's some breeds that are bred. I mean, the pigs were actually, because the fat was so valuable, they were bred to be fatter and fatter. Mm-hmm. And some pigs have just, you know, the wonderful quality of the fat. Mm-hmm. Now, it's the other lean white meat is, you know, that's a whole other breeding going in the opposite direction.
Well, then there is chicken fat and duck fat, which is not shortening. Which is not
absolutely.
Do you cook with that? I mean, do you bake
with that? Well, duck fat for cooking is highly, highly
That's
prized.
That's lovely stuff.
And people, I've had pastry crusts made with chicken fat.
Oh,
It's called schmaltz, the chicken fat.
Yes,
when
that's
it's
the
rendered.
Word. And one of the better words that we thank the Yiddish language for that.
Right.
Oh, that's a wonderful word.
That's what I'm saying. Fats were not thrown away, you know. Mm-hmm. I mean, do you remember even in our household, we had a little jar that was kept by the stove for bacon drippings?
Yes.
Something that makes food really good.
I still do that because as we are coming into the green season here, we have got like collards and kale coming up. And if you have some bacon drippings, that's a good way to start.
Well, yes, lard is good for that too.
And lard is good for that too.
And duck fat is, especially in French cuisine, is highly, highly prized. It's a wonderful cooking fat. And then they do something like it's called confit, which is, and we used to do this too when meats were canned. If you cook and pack meat like shredded chicken, shredded pork in fat, it preserves it quite a long time. So like a confit of chicken livers or a confit, that means they're just kind of cooked in the fat and then put into the jar with fat sealing it. Fat
That's
can
right.
seal
I've,
the tops
I've seen
of jars.
That. I've seen it. It's like the little cap that you put on.
Yeah, yeah. So don't waste those fats.
Oh.
Eat them judicious. Now, the other thing is lard has a healthier fatty acid profile than butter. It's got more of whatever the good ones are. So I think making cakes and pies with lard rather than butter is actually slightly healthier.
Ah, we will get back to that subject, and I think we can go on about that for a long time. You are listening to KHOI 89.1 Story City Ames. This is Donna Lana Kitchen, Tasty Radio for the heart of Iowa. This is the Donna Lana Kitchen. We are here in the kitchen today, and Donna is talking about the wonderful world of lard. Lard, something that we probably don't think about much, and whenever you've got a pig or cow or any other kind of beastie, there's fat on it, and there's good, usable stuff. Tell us about the wonderful world of lard, Donna.
Well, you know, I this started in my brain a couple weeks ago. I decided to get on a campaign of really cooking with more lard and less, you know, we've all become very olive oil centric. But you know what? We don't grow olives around here. And the closest olive oils are probably from California, maybe Mexico. Most of them are coming from Europe. And I went, I gotta rearrange my brain a little bit. So I started looking online for a good book about lard. Even, you know, I just wanted to see what was out there. So I got one called 100% Natural Lard, The Lost Art of Cooking with Your Grandmother's Secret Ingredient from the editors of Grit, not Grist, but Grit magazine. So it contains 150 time-tested recipes from that your family will love. Well, this is sort of like one of those old-timey books, and I'm not recommending that you run out and buy it, although it's kind of interesting. There's a bit about lard in the beginning and, you know, the usual pie recipes, the usual frying butter. There's, but I wanted it mostly because they have cake recipes in it.
Ah.
So this is my second cake that I've made with lard. This is a sort of pound cake, and I've brought some. What do you think? It's called a buttermilk pound cake. What do you think, Lana?
It is delicious. Very nice and moist.
Mm-hmm.
Golden and crumbly and good.
I would say it's certainly as good as baking with butter. It was kind of interesting, you know, because lard has a slight flavor to it.
Yes, yes.
Mm-hmm. It tastes a little piggy. You can, mm-hmm, you know, mm-hmm, and it's nice. It's rich. And mm-hmm, so when I first put it in a cake, I thought, how's this flavor going to go with the sweet flavors? And it's perfect.
It's wonderful.
You don't actually taste it, but it's there. It's like another layer of umami or something.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Now, you put this is a bundt cake sort of sort of pound cake.
This was a problem. The recipe recommended using, lightly dust a tube pan with lard, grease, and then dust with flour. So I got my tube pan. I made the batter. And then when I poured it in, I thought, this is an awful lot of batter for the tube pan.
Oh.
I came right up to the edge. So I stuck a baking sheet under it just in case. It's a good thing I did because the cake, of course, completely overflowed and filled up the whole center cavity of the tube pan. Well, it's okay. It worked out. I got a cake within a cake. When I lifted the tube pan off, there was another, perfectly formed little conical cake. So,
oh, goodness, like the cone of a volcano in the middle there.
Yeah, yes, more or less. So really, it should have said bake it in a bundt pan. You need a bigger cavity. But the recipe was so easy. It was, and we'll put it on the website. So a cup of lard softened, and then you, with your little hand mixer, you beat in 2 cups of granulated sugar, and then you whip it up and let the sugar start to dissolve. Then 4 eggs, a cup of buttermilk. Now, I didn't have buttermilk, so I actually put in some of my kefir. Mm-hmm. And it says, then you beat in the flavor, which is they use 2 teaspoons of lemon extract. Well, of course, I had to add more. I put in a little orange extract and a little Fiore di Sicilia. And then I put in, which you can order from King Arthur Flowers, in case you don't know what that is. It's kind of a orangey. No, it's not. It's lemon. How would you describe Fiore? It's very floral and lemon. It's citrusy. Mm-hmm. But I tend to throw it in a lot of things. And then I put a little ground coriander seed, so it has a little more flavoring. So you make, and then you just, it's as simple as can be. Then you dump in 3 cups of flour and then 1/2 teaspoon of soda, salt, and baking powder. And you can do this all in one bowl with the mixer.
I like those kind.
I know.
Back up to the use of the lard. In what stage is the lard when you put it? Is it like white-looking butter, or is it kind of melty? Or
It's like, how if you were making a pound cake with butter, you would soften it at room temperature.
Room temperature, and it pretty much,
and it just beats right into the sugar.
Okay.
Couldn't be simpler. And need I say, lard is less expensive than butter. So not only is it slightly more healthy, in moderation, but it's also very not expensive. I don't know, what do you think a whole tub is going for at Wheatfield? I can't remember.
I don't know. I have no idea.
It's not expensive, folks.
So
it's really, really not.
Courage out there, folks. Try something new.
So isn't this yummy? It's a lot like that recipe that we did a few weeks ago for Mother's Day with Ingrid's cake.
With the lemony thing. But this is not quite so lemony. This is just rich.
Yeah,
and it has a really nice crusty bit on the outside.
Mm-hmm.
It just kind of crumbles on the outside and is moist on the inside. This is buttermilk pound cake.
Yeah, I'm going to try some things that I don't even have recipes for the next time I have to bake. I'm just going to use lard, where I think you can make it a straight-out substitute for butter in a lot of your sort of cakey, bakey kinds of things.
There you go. So, lard. It's not just for pie crust anymore.
At least not in central Iowa.
Let's have a good time. Good. I had an adventure, a food adventure. I love radishes this time of year.
Oh, I do too. I think they're one of the more underrated vegetables on the planet.
And it's kind of like when the watermelons show up. You just kind of eat your fill. I mean, mm-hmm. I just really like to eat radishes. And a really nice, I just like them plain. I know a lot of people eat radishes with a little butter and sea salt. Oh, that's really good too.
Right.
That's really good. But I like them just plain old straight. But I ran across a recipe here from, I get a magazine because on farms in central Iowa, you can get on the mailing list to be part of the Farm News magazine, and they always have a recipe section. And in the recipe section for this week, they had radishes recipes. Talk about radishes. They talk about
radishes,
making vegetable chips out of radishes, but that's a bit of a fuss because radishes are not really your large vegetable, just roasting.
You could roast them with lard.
You could roast them with lard. Mm-hmm. But I tried this. I had a regular, rather large, round radish. I think Crimson Giant is the name of it. But it's called Maple Baked Radishes. You can bake them. Take some radishes.
You're roasting them, right?
Roasting them. And I just cut off the top and the bottom and drizzle a little unsalted butter over it. Actually, you could probably use olive oil, too. Or lard.
Yeah.
A little salt. A little cinnamon. A little bit of ginger if you would like.
Cinnamon if you'd like.
And drizzle with a little bit of maple syrup.
Oh, we're going sweet. Okay.
This is sweet.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And bake for about 30 minutes. And halfway through.
And they're whole.
These are whole.
Okay.
And surprisingly.
Couldn't be simpler.
They got soft. Mm-hmm. They got pink. The little red flavor went through the whole thing. And I stirred them around once because they started to bubble. And little round things, and they were so good. And I had that.
So sort of how many did you cook? Like 10, 15, 20?
I did two bunches, which was kind of like 20.
For two people.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then we had some folks over, and I took like three bunches worth. And I kind of did the same thing, but I left out the cinnamon and just tried. I cut them up in smaller pieces just to see how that would work. And I didn't use maple syrup. I just put on a little brown sugar. And that again.
And did you serve it as a side dish?
No, I put that right on top, hot, right out of the oven, on top of a salad there was spinach and a little arugula and some fresh new lettuce. And I had a little bit of radicchio coming. So on that salad, having a hot dressing on some of sometimes.
Oh yeah,
really
I
good.
Love to mix.
And so this
vegetables
was really good.
The
and
fresh
I did drizzle a little balsamic vinegar on the whole thing, and it was good. So think of baking your radishes.
You know, you could saute them as well.
Yes, you could. And actually, I made it in the toaster oven instead of toasting up the whole oven.
Oh, yeah.
In just a little toaster oven thing. And the timing may be a little different, but I'm used to sticking them in there and trying
think
them.
Of cooking your radishes. I think that's a marvelous idea right now that we're full of good, healthy, red, vibrant radishes. And eat them up.
And it's
supreme salad season right now, too. I noticed you've got your curly, what's that called? That curly red mustard green that's so beautiful.
Oh, yes. There's a many, many different kinds of mustard greens available now. Lots of different colors, lots of different hotnesses. And there's a very mild, lovely mustard. And it's sold under a bunch of different names in the garden catalogs. But I bought a variety called Scarlet Frills. And it looks, it's very spidery looking.
Yeah, it looks like a frisée kind of
frisée
in the salads. Now, this is the time of year when we have the best salads.
Go for salads.
Lots of different
things.
Kinds of greens. Now, Lana has been having a radicchio experience.
Yes, thanks to Donna's encouragement.
Donna loves radicchio. It's bitter.
I have been growing radicchio. A strange sort of green. It is a bitter, bitter green. It looks like loose leaf lettuce, but it does tend to head up.
Yeah, it's funny. It fools you because it looks like lettuce.
And big leaves.
Yeah.
And I'm growing a couple different varieties, and some of these varieties are a little tinged with red, but they're a bitter green.
And it's wonderful. I mean, it's think of how arugula has sort of taken the world by storm. Radicchio is like another notch more bitter.
It is.
Now, Lana told me, you know, because she's growing it, people at the farmer's market are not used to it yet. But several chefs in town bought up her full amount.
Yeah.
They know.
They're giving it a try.
Because
if you saute it a little bit or put it in with something else. Oh, let's see. One of them did a Mediterranean sort of green stuff to put on top of pasta. And it had radicchio as its main stuff. So it was sautéed. So I think there's a lot of things you can do with
it. Yeah, you can actually, when it comes in little heads, people used to just cut them in half through the root because it would stick together, and brush some olive oil on, salt and pepper, and throw them on the grill. And they're quite good that way, too.
Much to be explored in the radicchio
department. Well, I did it with, what did I do with the radicchio? I kind of chiffonaded it, cut into long, thin strips, and sautéed it with some sweet onions and salt and pepper, and then I made scrambled eggs with it.
With eggs, that would be good.
Yep. But it is very bitter, which I love, so you want to regulate the amount of it.
Mm-hmm.
According to your the likes of your audiences, it's something that one has to kind of grow into a little bit.
Very good.
Kind of like how children don't like coffee because it's bitter, you know.
We all learn new things. Another thing to explore out there. You're listening to KHOI. KHOI. You can find us on the web, khoifm.org. There's all kinds of stuff you can find out. It's not just our great show that's there, but this station is on 24/7, and there's a lot of local programming. We are your friends and neighbors. We talk about Central Iowa stuff, and there's also national programming, too. If you want to contact the Donalana Kitchen, tell us what's on your plate. Tell us your adventures with lard or radicchio. Go to khoiradio@gmail.com. Send us an email. Let us know what's going on. We're back. This is the Donalana Kitchen. It's summertime. I've got a few summer reading suggestions.
Oh, yeah, Lana's always turning me on to good books.
I love to read. I have an author. He does a lot of science fiction and fantasy. He's very prolific. He's actually written a lot of contemporary stuff, including some of the most recent Doctor Who sort of things. I mean, if you're into that kind of wonderful wacko humor, his name is Terry Pratchett, and he has written a series of children's books, and he writes under the name Miss Felicity Beadle. He probably doesn't want to admit that he writes these books. His latest book is called, and I found this at the public library, The World of Pooh, P-O-O, and I want to mention that because there seems to be a lot of concern, especially in North Carolina, about what's going on in the bathroom stall next to you. People seem to be very concerned about that sort of thing, and we've always had a fascination. Children have a fascination with poo. And that's what this book is about. It's a children's book. It's set in a fantasy place called Discworld, where a lot of his things are set. And it's for kids, but it's a fun read for other people too, including me. And this guy is really prolific, just to kind of let you know what these other children's books are
it
like.
It looks sort of like a Victorian book.
It is.
Although it's contemporary.
It's contemporary, yes. Well, it's sort of set in like old England, as in around Sherlock Holmes's time, except it's a fantasy world. So there's room for goblins and gargoyles and things. Some of the other titles in this series you may be interested in: Melvin and the Enormous Boil. That looks good. Gaston's Enormous Problem, The War with the Snot Goblins, and The Joy of Earwax. Now, I think those are all worth reading. And Terry Pratchett's a fun writer. Anyway, I recommend that one. It's a good summer reading book, quickie. I also picked up another book called Vintage by the author, David Baker. And it is a light read, kind of a murder mystery adventure story. The hero or the protagonist of this is a food writer. So the descriptions of food in this thing are fantastic. And it's a story of a detective following his nose through the world of wine. Starts out in New York, but goes to all places in Germany and France.
Oh, that's right. That book has been widely reviewed.
It's fun. Yep. It's fun. The character is kind of a combination of Nero Wolfe and the Galloping Gourmet. It leans toward the silly, but
And you learn a little bit about wine.
Oh, it's really fun. You learn about wine. You learn about food. It's fun. This is the book called Vintage. The author is David Baker by Touchstone Books. And again, I found that one in the public library. Both of these are in the new book section. Okay. So pick up a good summer book. Put on your sunglasses. Find a nice place in the shade and read. That was The Book of Poo by Terry Pratchett, writing under the name Miss Felicity Beadle.
I think I'm going to have to get one for my grandson.
Oh, you should. And David Baker, Vintage, about wine. Okay, we were talking about salads earlier. We kind of morphed from lard into salads. And I have had a good time experimenting. I did some chive blossom vinegar.
And a beautiful bottle it is, Lana.
It is. A little bottle. I jammed it full of chive blossoms. I just used some cheapo white vinegar. Donna, of course, cringed a little bit and said you would rather use.
I think I'm going to go and get... I've just run out of rice wine vinegar, which is slightly less acidic. So I think I'm going to go buy some. And although this tastes good, but you know the standard white vinegar. I mean, obviously, I use it for washing my windows.
Yeah, right. It's pretty strong.
It's pretty strong. It really works, and it makes a beautiful... I mean, this is something you might want to put away now, and if you make a few bottles, you would have some hostess gifts or such.
And it turns a wonderful pink. You put the flowers in there for
a little bit.
It's very pretty. I warmed up the vinegar a little bit. Not boiling, just warm.
Oh, really?
Just a little bit warm.
Okay.
And put it in, and... It didn't do anything
and
for like 2
else.
Days.
Nothing
else.
No salt, no pepper, nothing. Just the, okay.
And it didn't do anything. And then all of a sudden, the flowers kind of melted a little bit or got soft. And the vinegar is pink. It's oniony. It is good.
It's tasty. Well, now, I made a similar thing this week. And, okay, it's a little roundabout story. On Thursday at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, Lana and I will make a public appearance at Wheatsfield. Wheatsfield does this thing where every month they pick a different local organization, and if you bring your own bags, you either get a nickel refund or you can donate to the local organization. So for the month of June, the local organization supported by the Wheatsfield Bag Refund Donations is the radio station.
This fine radio station.
Yeah. So as part of this promotion from Wheatsfield, Lana and I will be appearing in the store. And what we're going to do, besides tell you about the radio, is we are going to have a tasting of two things that we talk about on the radio quite frequently because we both love them. And they are things that one cannot really buy. You have to grow it. So we're going to have a demonstration of lovage. And I'm going to make a rose geranium whipped cream. So if you want to taste what the rose geranium tastes like, and Lana will bring a plant so you can smell it, or you want to know more about lovage, we'll bring in some lovage, and I am making a lovage balsamic vinegar for tasting.
There you go. So come and meet us.
Yeah.
Yes. See what we look like in the flesh. As often happens, people never look like what you think on the radio. So come and be surprised. Yes, you
yes,
can.
Yes, and have a real taste and smell, things that we can't actually do on the radio.
We do hold things up to the microphone, but it just is not the same.
No, and we make lots of lip-smacking noises and nom, 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 nom.
So come and meet us.
Yeah.
And learn more about this fine radio station,
come and have
too.
A taste and a smell.
Oh, another?
So that's Thursday at from 4 to 6 at Wheatsfield.
Right. Wheatsfield Cooperative, that is on the west end of Main Street, downtown.
All right, just keep going over the railroad bridge and you'll find us.
Very good. Oh, also another thing, this time of year, strawberries are just
beginning.
I picked a few at Mustard Seed Farm.
Well, this sun that we're having this week is going to help them a lot.
And they were kind of few and far between, but they were worth it. And I want to mention that it's really fun to pick your own strawberries. Realize what it takes to grow. Get down,
well,
get down
we're
there.
We're going to put in a call to the Berry Patch and have Judy Henry tell us when they start their U-Pick operation that you can get all the kids out there picking their own berries. It's a beautiful spot, and there's nothing like that for just kind of a little family weekend trip. So we're starting into the berry season.
Oh, how nice. I want to mention, too, that as you go through, as you go up and down these rows, kind of pushing aside the plants, and there's this beautiful ripe strawberry, and you're working your way down the row, there are other interesting plants that like to, let's call them companion plants, that grow in the, you'll find a thistle
every now and then.
Lana
speaks from experience here.
And occasionally there's might be a milkweed that you come across, or a dandelion, and I was backing up, and I came into a real nice, healthy little patch of companion nettles out there.
Stinging
nettles.
You got stung. Okay.
And so, yeah. So I had a whole shoulder full of tingly, tingly, tinglies there. But I must say the strawberries are worth it. And looking forward to good strawberry season.
Oh, I hope we have a good strawberry year. I hope.
Well, there is supposed to be good, hot, summery weather coming up.
That's perfect. And we've had the rain to set them up.
Yes, yes.
And now that they're going to get soft, it's sunny. It couldn't be more perfect. I hope we do. Last year, they were way too soggy.
It's amazing how tenuous things are. That's why we celebrate when there's a good crop, because
reminds
it has
us of
to
our
be
own mortality.
Just, thank you. Yes, it does.
It's all tenuous. We just tend to forget.
You have been listening to the Donalana Kitchen. We have been talking about lard today, the wonderful world of lard. We're going to be listening as we go out here to the music by a band called Fluke. And they're a Celtic, Scottish, Irish. They do a lot of stuff. They're based in England somewhere or the other. They play all kinds of fun stuff. This last set you're going to hear is called Wrong Foot Forward. So here you go with it. Support KHOI. You can go to khoifm.org and stream or podcast or do anything else with your social media-y things. Find out about this show. Find out about lots of other shows. Go to our website. You can pull down the Donalana Kitchen website there. Find out about us.
Yeah, and come on down and meet us this Thursday at Wheatsfield, 4 to 6 p.m.
My name is Lana Noctical.
And I'm Donna Priskintas.
We've had excellent engineering by Dalton Gackle. And we shared cake, too. Good day, a very good day. Eat good food and enjoy life.